Gracious God, it is tempting to go back to fishing, to just return to normal because last Sunday was Easter. And today, well, it's just another Sunday. Help us to be reminded of the fact that you bring new life every day. And you bring redemption not only for Peter, but for us too. In the name of Christ. Amen. So I'd like to tell you about a place I heard about on the radio this week. It's a place I don't know that I'll ever get to, and I'm not sure it's going to be high on your list. It's called the Museum of Failure. It's in Helsingborg, Sweden, and it's going to open up in just a couple weeks. Now, I heard the curator, the guy that's put this museum together, talking, and what it is, it's a collection of things that have sort of come and gone, maybe quickly. Some of you might recognize what that is. That's a Sony what? A Betamax, that's right. You remember that battle that was happening back between VHS and the Beta, and what was going to last? It was the Beta that went by the wayside, and so sort of to the pile of technological failure, if you will. How many of you ever got to wear this cologne? Legendary Harley Davidson Hot Road cologne. No? No wonder it didn't do well. But they sort of launched it and they thought, you know, we'd make great motorcycles. Why not get into the perfume business like everybody else? And it sort of tanked. Or Colgate beef lasagna. Now, there's just something wrong with that, isn't there? I think people picturing brushing their teeth and eating lasagna at the same time, it just... I can see it. There's like a visceral reaction every time I put that slide on today. It's like, if people go, ooh, it's like, and I guess it didn't work. And so they got out, as quickly as they got into the frozen food business, they got out. And the Apple Newton, this was going to be the new rage, right? Everyone was going to own a Newton. There was a big launch and and then it sort of just went nowhere. Although many of these technologies become bridges for the next thing that came after it. And I'm sure that the Newton technology helped the Apple company know about these other pads that they would be selling us one day. And so this was sort of a bridge technology. As a matter of fact, the guy that's putting together this museum says that we learn through our failures. If we don't fail, we never grow and we never change. Now, he was inspired to create his Museum of Failure, he said, because he had visited a particular museum out in Los Angeles, California, called the Museum of Failed Relationships, which was what gave him the idea for the Museum of Failed Technologies, if you will. But the Museum of Failed Relationships, where you can find things like a boot-shaped glass, which had been given in love at one time, but when the relationship fell apart, the guy could no longer hold on to it. Or what would you do with this dinosaur pinata, which had one day been given lovingly by a girlfriend to a boyfriend, but he didn't have the heart to throw it away, so he donated it to the museum when the relationship was over, along with the story. This museum collects stories and artifacts, these most of them pretty sad stories. Or the woman who had gone out, she was dating at the time a Nebraska Cornhusker football player, so she had ordered for herself online a Nebraska cheerleading outfit. But when he left, she no longer needed that. Or how about this one? This is one of the saddest stories that I read about. It was this guy who broke up with his girlfriend, and to show that it was for real, that they would not have any other contact with her, he gave her his phone and the charger and said, "You will never call me again." So terrible. That's pretty cold. Pretty cold. Now, the reason I bring up the Museum of Relationship Failure and the Failed Relationships and the Museum of Failures, I think that Peter probably would have considered himself a candidate for maybe one or both of those places. Peter saw himself as somebody who had failed in that moment of decision, that moment of reckoning. If you recall, during Holy Week, there's that terrible scene, heart-wrenching scene, when three times Peter is asked, "Hey, weren't you one of his disciples? Didn't we see you with this Jesus? Hey, weren't you one of his?" And three different occasions, Peter says, "No. No, I do not know the man." You can imagine he was probably feeling pretty cut off from Jesus, like he had failed him for good. And so we get chapter 21 of John's Gospel. Now, a lot of people consider chapter 21 an addendum. And there's good case to be made for that. We've been reading John's gospel together. And if you read the end of chapter 20, there is a wonderful summary statement at the end of chapter 20. All these things have been written down, and there are more stories that I could write down. But all these things are written that you might believe, and believing have life in his name. Amen, amen, amen. Basically, it's a big hurrah ending to the gospel of John. And then comes chapter 21. Which probably, scholars think, was a later addition because there were more stories to be told. And this was an important story to be told. Now, Peter, this new leader in the early church, how did he get reconciled with Jesus? And so when this other story had to be added. You know the story. Peter wakes up one day and the resurrection has happened. Jesus, it says, has already appeared to the disciples a couple times. But they're not sure what to do with that yet. And so what do you do when you're not sure what to do? You just go back to the things that are comfortable and known to you. And for Peter, that was fishing. He says, I'm going fishing. Who wants to come with me? Some of the other disciples said, well, we're not doing anything much better. They jump in the boat. They go out. They start fishing. And they have a day like probably some of you. How many of you are fishermen or women out there? You ever have a day when you just don't catch anything? Well, they were having a day like that. They were having a day without catching a single thing. And a stranger is on the shore and says, well, what have you caught? And they say, nothing. And this stranger, who we know later on is going to turn out to be someone pretty special, says, well, throw your nets on the other side. And before they know it, the fish are like jumping in left and right. 153 of them, the nets are ready to break. And it's the beloved disciple that notices something is up and says, I think that's Jesus. I think that's the Lord. And when he says that, Peter puts some clothes back on because to fish, you sort of strip down to the bare essentials so you could not get tangled in the nets. And so he puts some clothes back on and he jumps into the water to race into shore to see this Jesus. I found this piece of art. I've never seen one of these of Peter making that leap into the water. You know, Peter is the obvious one to do that. Peter is the one who was always leaping before he was thinking, right? Peter was always the one who's speaking and then realizing he had put his foot in his mouth. Peter was always the most impulsive of all of the disciples. And so he leaps into the water, and I wonder what he's thinking as he is swimming into shore. Oh my gosh, what did I just do? If it's really Jesus, do I want to see him? If it's really Jesus, am I ready to see him? And so there's this wonderful... there's this wonderful meal that Jesus shares with his disciples on the beach. And the reason Peter is having doubts about his own relationship is because of the last time we had seen Peter. Now, I want to tell you, lift out a really important part of the story. It says that Jesus had made a charcoal fire on the beach for them where he's cooking the fish. Do you know there's only one other time we hear about a charcoal fire in all of the Bible? And do you know when that is? Anybody? It's the way the fire is described that Peter is warming himself by when he denies Jesus. Now, you know by now that John never does anything by accident, right? So John is talking about a new charcoal fire to counter that old charcoal fire, where Peter had three times denied Jesus, and the woman comes up to him, and another man comes up to him, another woman comes up to him. Do you know this Jesus? And he says, no. And one of the saddest pieces of art is you have a picture of Peter denying Jesus even as Jesus is being led away. I do not know this man. So you wonder what this encounter is going to be like. At least you've got to figure that Peter, the one who's feeling like a failure, the one who's feeling like he's let Jesus down, he's got to have mixed emotions, at least. And he makes it through breakfast. They have this wonderful meal, and you can preach a whole sermon about the fact that they have a feast, and Jesus takes bread and gives it to them, and takes fish and gives it to him. It sounds Eucharistic, doesn't it? It sounds like the holy meal that Jesus shares. And the feast that we are invited to participate in, he says, even though that Jesus already has fish cooking, he says, bring some more of what you have, and let's add it to the feast. Jesus is always doing that with us, isn't he? Bring what you have, and together we'll make a feast. But that's another sermon, another day. Today, it's all about this encounter with Jesus and Peter. And he only asks him one question, but he asks it over three times. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Now, I don't know. This is one of those cases where I wish the Bible would give us more details. Sometimes I wish the Bible would tell us about tone of voice and body posture and things like that. So the first time that Peter answers Jesus, is he like one of those teenagers, you know, that you're forcing a confession out of that doesn't really want to say they're sorry? So with arms crossed, says, yes, Mom, I'm sorry. Yes, Jesus, I love you. Head bowed, not really making eye contact. I don't know if that first answer was like that. But by the time the second question comes to Peter, you have a sense that his defenses are being broken down. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And a third time that question comes to him, Peter, do you love me? And by this point, Peter is exasperated. Yes, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus each time says, don't just tell me that you love me. Show me that you love me. Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. Feed my sheep. If you love me, Peter, don't just tell me with your mouth. Show me with your life. Now, it may seem like Jesus is rubbing salt into the wounds by asking the question over and over and over, but I would say quite the opposite. This is Jesus lovingly offering Peter a chance to wipe the slate clean. This Peter who had denied him three times now has the opportunity to affirm his relationship with Jesus again three times. Yes, Jesus, you know that I love you. How many of you remember this Breakfast Club when it came out? I'm calling my sermon today the original Breakfast Club, Jesus on the Beach. How many of you remember this movie when it came out? Any of you? It was a movie that took on a life of its own and became a symbol for a generation. All these misfit teenagers who were brought together in one place to serve a Saturday detention. And you had all of the representatives, the different types of the high school that were there. You had the popular girl, you had the jock, you had the nerd, you had the guy that was a little bit hardened and into drugs, smoking marijuana, and so you had them all there together. And what happens over the course of time is all of these stereotypes break down as they start to talk to each other and get to know each other and form a real community that day. And the theme song from that movie is Don't You Forget About Me. Do you remember that song? Don't you forget about me. Now, I think that's probably a good song for the disciples on the beach today, too, on this original beach club. Because Jesus is there to say to them and to Peter specifically, don't you dare forget about me. You may have acted on impulse in the moment. You may have acted in a moment to save your own skin, Peter. But now that I'm back and alive in the world and I've got work for you to do, don't you forget about me. Don't you forget about me. This is one of the more iconic quotes that came out of The Breakfast Club, the movie. Spend a little more time trying to make something of yourself and a little less time trying to impress people. I think Jesus very well could have said the same thing to Peter. Don't worry about what the crowds are going to say. Don't worry about what other people will think of you in that moment when you cave to the pressure. Remember who you are, Peter. Remember who I made you to be. Remember who I called you to be. And at the very end of that chapter, right, at verse 19, we hear the call of Peter, the recall of Peter in those two words, right? Follow me. It's a bookend because where else do we hear those words? Chapter 1. The end of chapter 1, from the first disciples are called, it's follow me. Come and see. Follow me. And now at the very end of John's gospel, a chance for Peter and all of us really vicariously to follow again. Jamie Clark Soles is a biblical scholar down at Perkins in Dallas. And she says, the beauty of signing on with Christ, The beauty of connecting our lives with Jesus, the beauty of being a disciple of Jesus is this. You learn that nothing you have done makes your life or your future irredeemable. That's the lesson that Peter learns on the beach that day. That's the good news that is offered to each of us, no matter how many times you or I have denied Jesus. No matter how many times by our words or by the things we haven't said, by what we've done or by what we haven't done, Jesus daily gives us the chance to answer this question anew. Do you love me? Do you love me? Then show me. Show me. Don't you dare forget about me. Oh yeah, and one thing else. Follow me. Follow me. Thanks be to God that we serve a God of redemption and second and third and fifth and tenth chances. Amen.